Hello, listeners, and thanks for tuning in to another episode of World Forge. World Forge is a podcast by creators and for creators, where we use random prompts to invent just about anything you can imagine. Together, we'll make heroes and villains, ancient monsters and magical cities. And our hope is that we inspire all the other creators and storytellers out there listening to do the same. So, without any further ado, I'm Sam.
And I'm Piper.
And welcome to World Forge. Hey, Piper, I got a question for you here really quick.
Hey, Sam, ask it.
What year is it? what day is it?
What day is it?
I have no idea where we're at right now.
Well, it's Monday. That's the weird thing.
yeah. So you listeners, we've had kind of a crazy weekend here, actually. It's been a bit hectic. You may be noticing that this episode is coming out a little bit later than it usually does. there's just been so much going on for us. And I think for sanity's sake, we needed to delay this one just slightly. So, we're glad to have you back here anyway. But, it's just been so much. I had some family was like moving and I was helping them move and I built a fireplace and I got bit by a bunch of ants and then I'm on jury duty and we went
hiking and taking photos.
Yeah, we had a
crazy stuff.
We had a lot of stuff going on. So here we are again. Part of this slight delay in the episode is also going to necessitate this being a little bit shorter of an episode than usual. Mm-hmm. Sorry about that this week, but we'll be back again next week, of course, with a regularly scheduled and timed episode. Just needed to cut it a little bit short for us this week. So
yeah, but you know, even though it's slightly delayed and even though it's slightly short, the content is still going to be phenomenal.
Yes. Yeah, we still have a very cool topic this week. We actually are... Oh, yeah. So one of the other things that that we had going on this week, I appeared as a guest on a live stream of a good friend and listener of the podcast. That's Holy Cannoli on Twitter. They got 666 followers on Twitter. And so they did a Dark Souls and Ghost Pepper live stream to celebrate. So they ate a Ghost Pepper and tried to beat Dark Souls. Well, I just talked about the lore of the game and it was really, really fun. And we were really happy to come on and do that. But we were kind of talking during the stream and he was giving us some ideas about his game that he's building right now, and we thought it would be a really fun thing to talk about on air here. He had some interesting ideas about – so he kept it kind of vague intentionally because mm-hmm. Some of his players were in the chat, and I think we're going to try and keep it a little bit vague and open-ended here as well because we don't want to spoil anything for anybody that's in his game. But
absolutely.
The kind of core idea that he had was that there would be a ship that is basically made of like living trees mm-hmm. and that it's powered by this group of druids that they kind of sail around and they grow the tree like they grow the ship like a bonsai tree, basically, kind of watering it and tending to it and using their druidic magic to maintain it and, you know, kind of sailing the ship around based on their magical prowess. And, you know, the ship could have like fruits that grow out of the walls and things like that. So it's sort of this floating grove, essentially. And it reminded me a lot of an idea that I had a while ago, kind of similar to that, it would basically be like a coven of witches that was cast out of some area and they built a ship out of trees and sailed around. And so we thought that was so cool that we both had kind of a similar idea and thought maybe we should just build on that on air here. So, we're going to be expanding on that a little bit. We're going to be maybe coming up with some other ships, some other crews, what kind of shenanigans.
The world takes place
in. Yeah, what the world is kind of comprised of, like what types of things these druids get up to. Are they in danger? Are they good? Are they evil? Are they, you know, what's going on here?
Though we are surpassing our usual segment where we talk about inspirations, yeah. I do have to say the idea of a ship that is a floating grove, it instantly makes me think of Life of Pi, which is one of my favorite movies.
Of course.
And a book that I have yet to read but would love to, which is at some point in this miraculous story about a young man who's trapped in a lifeboat with a Bengal tiger. Right before he thinks he's about to die, he washes ashore on this very strange island that is kind of just a floating mass of tangled trees, and it's overpopulated by what are they, meerkats.
Yes.
And at night the waters become toxic. It's very spooky there.
Yeah.
And he realizes he has to go and leave the island, otherwise it will devour him as it is devouring other organisms there.
I like that a lot. That hadn't even occurred to me, the parallel there, and I think that's a really nice insight. It makes me think of I like the idea of it being sort of like a phantom island, you know,
yeah.
that it doesn't really obey the laws of physics, and it's weird and spooky, and it's, is it a dream? Is it even really real? Like, what's kind of going on? And that kind of pervades a lot of Life of Pi.
Mm-hmm.
It's very sort of, well, I don't want to spoil Life of Pi for anyone,
and
but
you
things are not what
the
necessarily seem at all times. So, yeah, it's really fun. It makes me think of the idea of like a ghost ship.
Mm-hmm.
And I think something that would be really cool too, that I kind of want to expand upon. I was thinking about this a little before the show is, you know, we generally think of a ghost ship as a ship where the crew has been killed and the spirits of the crew haunt the ship and it sails around, you know, as like a derelict vessel. But, I kind of like the idea of a ship that, if it's made of living wood, of living trees, you know, maybe that could even extend so far as to have been made of like dryads or ents or something like that.
Ooh,
and
sad.
The spirits of the tree that the ship is built of haunt the ship. And so maybe, you know, maybe even what would happen is these people chop down a bunch of trees, they build a ship, the tree spirits get angry, you know, whether it is that they're ents or dryads or whatever, maybe it is just kind of like a general forest spirit. And then those spirits take revenge and kill the crew, and now the crew also as ghosts are stuck on the ship. So there's sort of this like tug of war in this ship where the different
like
spirits are fighting for control of it. Yeah, I thought that would be kind of a fun thing to explore. And if a D&D party finds this vessel somewhere floating around or moored somewhere or whatever, they could get on, and depending on the inclinations of the party, they may side with the ghosts of all of the, you know, the humans and elves and dwarves or whatever, or they may side with the spirits of these trees that are trapped here as well. Like,
yeah.
Who do they release and who do they commit to in eternal punishment trapped aboard this sort of floating hell?
I'm just picturing somebody boarding that ship and they're doing the thing like in the movie Fern Gully, where she puts her hand on the wood of the ship and she's like, can you feel its pain?
Yeah, of course. And then you help it grow, obviously.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Tim Curry turns into a giant smoke monster and you fight him, and that's like the final boss of the program. That sounds awesome.
So a ship like that, I picture the sails might be like made of a bunch of like leaves that have been
yeah.
kind of sewn together.
Yeah, I like
maybe
that.
You could have enormous leaves, like a banana leaf, something like
so,
that.
So yeah, I think Noel mentioned something kind of like that on the stream. He said something about just like one giant leaf or something that you have to maintain. But I kind of like the idea of leaves like a bird's feathers or something that
yeah,
are sort of interlocked
layered.
Like that.
Because that would make for great like waterproofing too.
Yeah.
If you were like caught in a storm.
Exactly. Yeah. It kind of serves multiple purposes. Maybe the sail can be moved in such a way that it becomes like a roof during a storm as well. You know, like
nice.
When you lower the sail, it kind of angles it over the deck of the ship and protects the ship from getting wet.
I like that.
I guess if the ship is made of living trees, you might not want to protect it from getting wet. You'd kind of want it to.
Right.
In fact, actually, that would probably be a really important thing. Like rain would be a big deal because, you know, if you're floating out on the sea on salt water, the trees can't drink that. People can't drink that. Mm-hmm. Water would become a very, very important commodity. So, you know, maybe you would sail around following rain clouds or something, and that's kind of how you have to navigate.
I was going
to
say someone on the ship should be a meteorologist
yeah.
because their whole job is to be able to watch the horizon, track storms, and say we need
For
to
sure.
go where the rain is.
So maybe that's the thing. So if, you know, like a ghost ship always appears on a full moon or something, this is a ship that always appears when there's a storm, or it can only sail or it can only sail outside of a storm for a very short amount of time. So
cool.
It just kind of has to go where the storms are.
I like that a whole lot.
And go from, you know, from freshwater to freshwater.
Then I can see if you spotted this vessel, it would become sort of a warning that says when you see this ship, a hurricane is on the way.
Of course.
Because
it's
a sign.
Far away.
Exactly. Because it and the hurricane are interlocked with one another.
I like that. The ship, I think, could be called, like, the Storm's Eye or something like that.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah. Ooh, okay.
Another thing I was thinking of. So, obviously, all of the ropes would have to be vines.
Yes, certainly.
Easy.
Certainly.
But I think it'd be really interesting because – I'm picturing, like, roots of a tree suspending down into the water beneath, like, the main bow and and base of the ship,
yeah,
and kind of dragging behind. And I think what they could do is the roots that hang beneath the ship, they would attract fish and other mm-hmm. creatures, and you could use that to gather like food and supplies while you're, if you're alive on this yeah. vessel, not like the ghost crew, but if your party somehow gets on there, you could get down to the roots and, you know, harvest fish and different things
yeah,
that are
like
living
that.
There.
Maybe the vines that are dragging under the ship have like thorns on them or something, so they catch things. They're sort of like dragging the seafloor for shells and fish and things
yeah,
like that.
I'm almost picturing sort of a ecosystem developing, yeah. like almost a coral reef would kind of grow off of these dragging roots.
Okay, I really like the idea of there being two separate biomes that kind of develop. There's
yeah.
the above water and the below water section of the ship,
yeah.
right? So there's these vines that drag. They're used as kind of a net to catch things, maybe even to kind of troll for treasure as an anchor. The vines can like latch onto stuff down there, but yeah, these corals and things are growing.
I've been watching a lot of Our Planet.
Yeah, so I was just gonna
so
say,
I'm picturing a lot of these nature things,
the kelp forests that we saw in that.
Ooh.
I think that would be really cool. Maybe it's kind of like
long tendrils
an underground kelp
yeah.
forest that,
or, falling behind
like in upside down kelp forest that like grows out of the bottom of the ship.
That'd be really cool.
Yeah,
okay, I like that a lot.
Neat. And because of these different sort of biomes that develop, the different types of creatures that could sort of find a home on this ship. So there would be a crew sailing it, of course, right? But the inhabitants of the ship probably wouldn't be limited to just the human or the elven or the tiefling or whatever inhabitants of the ship. You know, maybe there is this druidic circle that steers this ship around, but there would also be birds that would nest up in the trees.
And I was going to say, and birds that just follow the ship
yeah.
as well, because if there's a whole ecosystem and a steady source of fish that live underneath it, I'm sure they'd be swarming and diving down
absolutely.
To go and get their food as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, this would be a cool thing is in the kelp forests underneath, there would be like sharks that swim around in there.
Very cool.
And so if they get into a fight and they throw a guy overboard, the sharks can, you know, eat him. And then the sharks also kind of act like a, you know, little shark torpedoes they can shoot out to attack other ships or something.
Oh yeah, because if we're going with the druidic crew idea,
yeah,
because they automatically form these natural kind of bonds with animals and plants and
yes,
things like that.
Yes.
So because there's this cohabitation, perhaps there is sort of almost a magical agreement that if the ship is ever attacked, then the sharks will go after those attacking the ship because they
for
rely
sure.
on that ecosystem.
Yeah.
So they defend it.
It's like a territorial thing, but it's also sort of it's symbiotic, but it's also kind of just like their own internal practical thing. We have to protect our home. We have
right.
to protect your home. We have to all kind of work together here.
I'm picturing like the ghost druid captain on the ship. He would like extend his hand and a great white would like jump out of the water
for
at
sure.
you. And you'd be like, holy crap.
Well, so here's a thing that I think we should maybe establish here, because I think this is it's two different ideas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't know if it makes the most sense for the druid ship to also be the ghost ship, or maybe the ghost ship is like something that they're seeking after
okay.
for some reason.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
so the druid ship is living people
yeah.
who can feed off the fish that live in the corals beneath them.
Yeah.
And are just out there. Their ship is still made of trees, though.
I think, yeah.
So they do chase the storms.
I think they both, yeah. I think maybe this is sort of like a philosophy of shipbuilding, right? Like this isn't necessarily a super uncommon thing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe hundreds of years ago, this ghost ship had a druid circle that was running it the same way, and they were all killed, and somebody else took over that didn't respect the forest spirits that the ship was inhabited by or something, and that's where this conflict started. So maybe that's why these druids are looking for it, is they're sailing around trying to find the Storm's Eye vessel so they can kind of cleanse it and release all of these forest spirits and
I like that.
And reclaim it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool. It's like an exploratory sort of, I don't know, they're on like a holy quest kind of to,
very
to
cool.
reclaim these spirits and free them from their prison.
I like the idea that because the spirits are trapped in this vessel and they are so tormented, they maybe are slightly aware that someone is pursuing them, but they don't know because they're so wrought with like anguish and pain
yeah,
from what's happened
sure.
to them. They can't comprehend that the person pursuing them is trying to help. So they're constantly fleeing.
Awesome.
And so that's
yeah,
what kind of drives the chase.
They have a singular purpose. Like I think that's often an interesting idea that in like stories about hauntings or about poltergeists or whatever, if you die with unfinished business or if you die, you know, under circumstances where you were focused on like one particular thing, when you come back in undeath, that's the only thing that you can focus on. That's like the only thing that remains of who you were before you died. I think that's really interesting.
I agree.
Yeah.
So, Sam, I've gathered a couple of randomly generated prompt words.
Cool.
Do we want to use some of these to build out some other concepts?
Yeah, let's sprinkle these in. Do we want to maybe apply these prompts to... We should start with one ship and I think build it up a little bit more, and then move to the other ship and build it up a little bit more. Maybe talk about specific members of the crew, talk about specific journeys they've been on, where they've been, you know, in the past, things like that.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Well, so the first word that I have here is the word crackle.
Crackle. Okay. Snap, crackle, pop. Rice Krispies.
Here's what I first comes to mind with crackle. Perhaps one of the ships has been sailing for a long time. I actually think this might be the living druid crew ship.
Okay.
And every now and then out at sea, you encounter doldrums, right?
Yeah.
And so perhaps there has not been rain for a while, and the leaf sails have become, they've started to dry.
Oh, okay.
And something happens one night. Maybe somebody goes out, lights up a cig, and whoops, up in flames goes their sail. And you wake up in the middle of the night to the crackling of all these burning leaves.
Oh,
and you're like, oh, no, we have to, what can we do?
I wonder if that would probably have to be. Well, okay, so we talk about how there's different tasks on the ship, right? There would have to be an astronomer on the ship or a meteorologist on the ship to help find the storms and things like that. Maybe there is another druid that is like a fire elemental druid or something, and they didn't realize how long it had been. They'd been working really hard. They haven't had a storm in a while. They're exhausted. They didn't realize how dry the sails were, and they go to light the lanterns or something really mundane like that, and yeah, the sails go up in smoke. And that would be probably a thing that they talk about all the time. Like they would say, you know, beware the crackle, or watch out for the crackle, or something like that. There'd be a crackle meter on board.
A little
speedometer for crackling, how close we are.
Yeah, maybe that guy, he got a little too much into the drink that night.
Yeah, probably. He was drinking that fire water. Yeah.
Did a little burp and whoosh, up they went.
I like that idea. And I think that poses a very interesting problem for them, that maybe they knew there was a storm that was just, you know, only a day's sail away, but now they can't get there. Maybe they have to, you know, exert themselves in some way that the ship can grow, you know, like paddles or something, and the ship can kind of move itself, but that's extremely taxing on the crew.
You know what I was thinking too is maybe they could try and will their relationship with the sharks or some other like water creatures say, can you pull our ship for us for
a
bit?
Can I get a lift?
Yeah. Like, can we give you these tethers and can you drag us along with you? Maybe one of them is able to summon forth a great whale.
Yeah.
And say, hey, friend, please pull us for a while.
I like that idea a lot. There's sort of that Aquaman energy there a little bit.
Yeah, right?
Where they can have these, they can have all these different sea creatures that help them. Yeah, that's cool. I wonder if they have good relationships with all manner of sea creatures, you know what I mean? Because
right.
they ally themselves with these sharks that live in the kelp underneath the ship. Maybe other types of sea creatures are kind of wary of them because of that. They're like, you picked a side. The sharks eat us. We don't necessarily want to help you out. You know, if they come across a school of leatherback turtles, they're going to be like, no, we're not going to help you.
No way, dude.
Yeah, a lot of us get eaten because you help these sharks to thrive. There's too many sharks now and it's your fault. That could be kind of an interesting thing. So what sort of trade would they make with a whale to get a whale to help them?
I feel like any bargain they create, they could say, well, you can feed off of the, you know, the schools of fish that live in the biome beneath our vessel.
Yeah.
But a whale is looking for krill. So,
I also feel like a whale would be like, you couldn't stop me from feeding off the fish under your vessel if you wanted to. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not sure what they would offer a whale. Maybe whales love stories or knowledge.
Oh, that would be cool.
And you can say, hey, whale, I bet you haven't heard stories from the land in a long time.
I like that.
We'll give you some tales.
Or they, you know, or
a
maybe
whale
they,
of a tale.
A whale of a tale.
And he'll be like, if it's not a whale of a tale, I'm not interested. But
so
if you've got a good one.
A really cool idea. And it makes me think of I like the idea of whales as this sort of mythological beast. You know, if you look at you know, old maps of the sea, there's always that little drawing where it's like, here there be monsters. And it's just a picture of a whale.
It's a big
generally
whale.
Generally a big whale. Because they're just so huge and unknowable and crazy. There's all of these insane stories about them that would arise in this world. Maybe they're not something that most people have ever seen. They've just heard stories about it. And they live for like thousands of years. They are actually a magical mythological creature in this world. So it's not just just that it's stories. The stories are true, basically. And so these whales, they spend thousands and thousands of years roaming around the oceans, but they never get to see this other world mm-hmm. on land. They want to be a part of your world, like Ariel. And well, so they would want to hear stories of it. That would be probably something that would be very valuable to them.
Here's something, too. I kind of love this idea. So as we all know, whales are mammals, and they have hip bones
Correct.
In their skeletons. Yes. And at one point, whales were land-walking creatures that mm-hmm. returned to the sea, and their legs fell off, and they became whales.
It wasn't a gradual process. They flopped
snap,
in the water, and
they popped off. And the legs swam away.
Yes.
Well, maybe. Because if these whales are thousands of years old, maybe their generations have they passed down stories from those who came before them.
Yeah.
And so there are legends within the whale lore of the time of the land walkers.
Oh, of the land whales. The time of the land whales.
The time of the land whales.
Well, I like it.
And so I think a part of them kind of longs to know what's happening there. And so a druid who is knowledgeable enough in this would say, I can help tell you what's happened on the land and, you know, continue your stories.
I like this a lot. I'm picturing this grand myth of them being, you know, maybe they were – okay, so I think whales have a weird evolutionary trajectory, right? Because everything started out in the water, right? Everything started as like weird little fish that some of them grew lungs and limbs and, you know, went back on land.
Crawled out from that primordial
out, exactly,
sludge.
From the primordial soup. they crawled onto land and then adapted to land. And then whales, weirdly, decided, we don't really like it on land anymore. We're going to re-evolve back into being ocean-dwelling creatures.
Right.
Which is so crazy, right? Maybe their grand myth is the journey from like one body of water to another. So say all of these whales or these proto whales kind of existed in one body of water and it became too salty or too acidic or something like that. And they had to gradually adapt to life on land. But then when they got on land, there were too many predators or there was, you know, they couldn't really hack it because it wasn't where they felt their people really belonged. And so they go on this great journey to find another source of water that's more suitable to them, like Great Valley style.
Yeah.
And that would be this journey, the march of the land whales or
I
something
love that.
Would be the story that they want to know where their ancestral home is. That's
right.
The story that they're looking for. What
maybe,
happened to our original home?
Exactly. Or maybe there are rumors or legends that there are some of their kind that stayed behind.
Yeah,
and they
for
want
sure.
to know, are they still there?
And what do those whales look like?
Yeah.
I imagine they would be super crazy looking compared to normal whales, you know? Like, mm-hmm. they would have weird bony spikes and they're like, you know, Siamese fighting whales or something like that. Like, they would have some kind of strange, like scary evolutionary track because they would
cool.
have to have evolved to a more harsh environment.
Maybe they evolved these large solar fins that
Ooh.
They, because the water became acidic and toxic. And so their fins became like these big solar planes that would stick out of the water and absorb energy through sunlight.
Okay, cool. And so they can use that energy to like magically disperse the toxins in the water or something like that.
Yeah, that like helps them live in this water.
Cool, I like
just
that.
One thought.
these big old solar whales.
Yeah.
Oh, I like it. I like when we make things that are just whales in space or you know, throwback to an early episode here. Whales are really, really cool. And I think everything should be part whale is
yeah,
basically
definitely.
What I'm getting at.
I think also before we move on to the next thing,
yes.
Definitely the way the druid summons this whale to help pull their ship. He has to be part bard and sing a whale song.
Oh, of course. Yeah. He goes like Finding Nemo Dory style here. And he shouts out his horrifying whale song. I like that a lot.
Or he creates a little instrument that can make
yeah.
it sound just like, you know, singing with whales.
I picture it being basically like a bagpipe with a giant horn on the end, you know? Because, it has to be like a super loud booming sound, right?
Then if you put it in the water,
I
sound
suppose.
Carries really far.
That's a good point, actually. So maybe that's the thing. Maybe it's an instrument where it just dips into the water.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty interesting, too, actually.
Yeah.
How weird is that, an instrument that you can only play near a body of water?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
It's like in Harry Potter 4,
yeah.
The Goblet of Fire,
yeah.
Isn't that it?
That's
or,
the one.
Yeah, where they get those golden eggs from the first tournament, and if you open it, it sounds like screeching, but if you open it underwater, it sounds like a pretty song.
I do not remember that at all.
That's because that movie was forgettable,
yeah, okay.
in my opinion.
yeah, well, this is a cool story for the whales. I hope they find their ancestral home here.
Right?
So and this is also like, I like that it's two stories sort of for these druids, because they're seeking the the ghost ship to kind of purify it. And in that journey, they have to kind of take a detour and help these whales and tell them a story and, you know, and
yeah.
do this whole thing for them. I think that would be a really interesting role play mm-hmm. scenario. You know, say you fail your knowledge check on this. You don't actually know the story. Is your bard clever enough to just bullshit something yeah. that's believable for them? You know what I mean? And do you think that that's morally right if these whales are going to use their magic to regrow legs and go and find their ancestral home? Is that something that you're okay with? Also, what happened to all the whale legs that fell off? Did they swim away and become starfish or something?
I was going to say, yeah. they became Sam's other favorite thing, which is just a mass of limbs yeah, that grows together.
True, a horrifying mass of limbs, Dark Souls style. Yeah, I love
that lives in the Marionic Trench.
Oh, man.
Those are all the whale legs.
It sounds so beautiful.
It sounds terrifying.
Me, honestly. yeah, let's take a look here at this ghost ship now and see what we could do with this one. What's our next prompt, Piper?
Our next prompt is the word confused.
Amazing. I think we've already kind of touched on that a little bit with they've got sort of their singular focus. It, mm-hmm. it makes sense that there would be sort of a lack of awareness of what else is going on in the world.
Yeah.
Is there some other way we can add on to that a little bit more? Like maybe if we focus a little more clearly on their drive or on something in particular that kind of stymies them?
So my mind is going to how in Princess Mononoke, a scene that always creeped me out still does, is when all of the people, they create those boar outfits.
Yes.
Where they're wearing the skins of the boars.
Oh, the hunters.
Yeah, yeah, and they fool that great boar god, by leading him off to this place. It's so spooky and I hate it.
Yeah.
But maybe someone else is pursuing the ship for some reason.
Okay.
And they create a false thing for the ghost ship, essentially. Yeah. I don't know. They would create some sort of mirage or illusion. And the ghost ship is confused but is moving towards it. Because it's like, that's what we've been looking for this whole time.
For sure.
Maybe it's some tree heaven or something. Where they're like, oh, the place of eternal roots. That's where we have to go. And then we can be at peace.
I like that. We can replant our roots on land again and become, you know, living trees again.
Yeah. So I don't know who would do this to this ghost ship, but maybe someone has some sort of reason for wanting to lure them.
I mean, there's a lot of magical energy inherent in this ship. If we talk about how these ships are kind of maintained, we talked about a little bit, I think, there being kind of like a magical like basin of water in the core of it. And that has to be sort of replenished and maintained. Maybe there isn't really anything inherently magical about the basin itself. It's just imbued with magic by the druids who sort of man the ship. But other people out in the world who don't know a lot about magic would maybe hear legends of these ships that are sustained by just a simple basin of water. Mm-hmm. And they would think, oh, is it the Fountain of Youth? Is it a, you know, are there magical healing properties to this fountain? So maybe it's a group of adventurers who are, you know, trying to get this ghost ship to run aground somewhere so they can jump in and raid it and try and take that basin, thinking that it's magical.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not magical at all. Maybe it's become cursed. Maybe it's like, you know, you instead of drinking from the cup of a carpenter, you've drunk from the wrong basin.
You know what? Okay, so my mind is instantly going to the Flying Dutchman, Davy Jones, all the Pirates of the Caribbean movies 1 through 3 that matter.
What do you mean the ones that matter? You mean the only ones
that exist? The only ones that exist. Yeah, there weren't any movies made after the third one. Don't you know? So I'm thinking that it feels like these are the kind of things that people just start creating legends about, right?
Yes.
So maybe similar to that idea, like some people think that the basin of water is magic.
Yes.
Some people maybe have said, oh, well, don't you know that on that ship it has the greatest treasure in its hull? But that's probably not true, but that's something that people believe.
Yeah, and so people see it and they're like, we don't know anything about this. They just make up whatever story.
Yeah, because that's what people do when they see something they don't understand. And I also think about it's a pretty common thing in the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. The idea of both the Black Pearl and the Dutchman are these vessels that everyone wants to have under their control because they are uncatchable, unstoppable. And if you have them, like if you can captain that ship, then no one can stop you.
Yeah.
And so maybe there are also people who are simply saying, I need to have this like impossible ship as my own. I need to add it to my fleet.
And even just the prestige of having that ship, you know, would be exciting. Like some captains wouldn't even necessarily care about the treasure. They would just say, I'm the only person that's been able to steal one of these ships and pilot it. I'm not a druid, but I can still pilot it because I'm the best captain. I know that I can do it. That sort of hubris, I think, is an interesting motivating factor as well.
I think is so fitting for a pirate setting. and things like that.
Totally.
So I would definitely love to come up with a pirate captain who is dead set on capturing this ship.
I like it a lot.
And adding it to his armada. Yeah.
I think arrogance and overconfidence are some of the most are often very interesting traits to have in a villain.
Yeah.
If they really believe that what they're doing is right, and they really believe like nothing can stop me, I can do this, I have a singular drive, that can be really cool. That can generate a lot of really interesting interactions.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, should we maybe focus on that then as kind of the story of this?
Let's do that a little bit.
Cool. So who is this captain? Mm-hmm. Where are they from? What are they doing? Why is there a chip on their shoulder? Why do they want to be the most prestigious, most well-known pirate captain in all the land?
So I like the idea, and I've toyed with this a couple of times with some of my own creations and stories and stuff that I'm working on, but I like the idea that there is somebody who they have overcome so many challenges that now they're sort of bored by the normal obstacles that would face them.
Yeah.
So this pirate, they've evaded all of the, you know, naval officers who try to stop them. They've sacked many towns. They've taken a lot of treasure. They've built up a pirate fleet of their own. And this person, I think, is like kind of bored, and they're like, I need a challenge. Like, what's something that is worthy of my grandeur and my greatness and my ferocity?
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
And they probably even are like, if I die doing this, all the better, because that's the only thing left. To die would be an awfully great adventure.
Exactly. You know?
That's a really, really cool motivation.
Maybe similar to the whales, this person is very drawn to the idea of a story, and that is the greatest treasure of all, is the story that is told.
And I will become the greatest treasure of all, the greatest story ever told.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's neat. So, yeah, I think this person is – they hear about this ship and they become obsessed with it.
Okay. So what are we thinking then? Are we thinking human, elf, dwarf, like mer person, something like that? What would be an interesting sort of – you know, if we want to found this in a D&D sort of setting here, what makes a lot of sense?
I would think either like a human or a dwarf to go after sort of the greed element of it.
Yeah, that's a good point. A dwarf makes a lot of sense for that. I mean, that's sort of one of the typical traits of dwarves, that they're like, oh, like gold and treasure and things like that. Not that that's always the most interesting way to go.
Right.
But I think you don't often picture a dwarf like on a ship either. I don't think I imagine if somebody just says, hey, a pirate – if I thought of 10 different pirates, none of them would probably look like dwarves, because that's just not really what you generally expect of a dwarf.
Yeah.
Maybe that's really dwarfist of me. maybe that's a problematic viewpoint. I don't know. But it's not what you generally expect, and I think that makes it interesting.
I feel like maybe if it is a dwarf, which I think we should go with their background in, you know, minerals and industry, maybe they have sort of these large steam-powered vessels.
Yeah.
And that's partially what has allowed them to kind of take over the seas.
Totally.
And so, yeah, I can see them in these large steam-powered ships. And that, I think, is his – that gives him like a mechanical advantage.
Yeah.
He says other like normal ships that sail just by the wind and the tides, they can never catch this vessel. But my ship can.
For sure.
I've used my great piratey wealth to build up the best, most powerful mechanical ship.
Yeah. And it's this whole, you know, science versus nature kind of thing too. Is the magic actually inherently less powerful than what, you know – mankind or, you know, society can achieve through just their own creations?
Yeah.
That's a really interesting thing. And it's another thing that, again, it's giving a choice to the party. What do you side with? Do you say, okay, no, the power of science is interesting. It's fascinating. We want to do that. If you have a bunch of, you know, gnomes and tinkerers and dwarves in your group that say, yeah, we want to build stuff. We want to build big steamships and, you know, but we want to have a you know, giant siege engines and things like that. Maybe you side with this pirate. But if you are a group of druids, or if you are more magically inclined, maybe you say, no, we have to maintain the power of magic in the world. Mm-hmm. Or maybe even a third option. Maybe you have to have this balance. Maybe you trick the captain into going on a never-ending journey so they can never resolve this quest, so no side wins out over the other.
One visual that just popped into my head, the way that our which I'm picturing is a good party, the druids on their tree ship. Kind of as a parallel to that, I think alongside his flagship, he has these mechanical sharks that like swim in the water along with it. And they have like spirally teeth and little drills in their mouths.
I love it.
Yeah. Aren't there little red eyes?
Am I thinking?
That's definitely from something.
Yeah. It's in like James and the Giant Peach or something like that, I think.
Yeah. Is it's that, like the big, right? Yeah, the big submarine shark thing they encounter.
Yeah, yeah. I like that a lot. I like a steam powered shark. That's cool. And it's like a, maybe there is just a little dwarf inside of it, like a little submarine, and he's like, yeah, I'm the king of the sea now, and he's fighting other sharks.
I love that. It makes me think of in Labyrinth, where oftentimes you see like the giant robot guard that they have to fight at the gate in order to get into the Goblin City.
Yeah.
When they like break open the head, there's just a little dude inside. He's like, oh no! And he's like pulling all these levers like to make the big monster operate.
Yeah, I like that a lot. So he has a fleet of, I guess everything he does would be sort of in mockery of the way these druids do things. So it makes sense that he'd say, well, you have a fleet of sharks? So do I. My sharks have guns on them.
Yeah.
And they're piloted by little dwarves, you know? I think that's awesome. I like it a lot. What other types of things would he have to sort of imitate the ecosystem that grows out of the druid ships? Like, what would be a cool parallel to all the animals and things that live on the druid ships? Which also, by the way, I think there should be monkeys on the druid ships also. There should be spider monkeys that help with the rigging and the sails that like swing around in the vines.
I like that a lot. They'd have cute little bandanas on their heads.
Yeah.
And they would also maybe peg legs.
Yeah. Peg-legged monkey.
Peg-legged monkey.
Eventually, like, all of a monkey's legs would just be pegs and they're like cartwheeling around.
Cartwheel across the deck.
I like that. They would also probably have to have like pollinators too. If fruits and things grow from the sides of the ship, mm-hmm. they would have to have a bunch of bees. So another crew member would have to be like an apiarist, keeping track of all these bees so that they can pollinate, so they can grow food for everybody.
I love that. I think our pirate captain, he has a swarm of little drones that fly around the ship. And I think he uses them to scout ahead to look for his targets.
I like it.
Yeah. They can like zoom across the ocean and then they'll come back and report.
And do the drones look like, I picture them being little like scarab beetles or something like that.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah. So
maybe he has one that's, it looks like a mechanical albatross.
Oh, cool.
And that's something that's actually kind of really scary. He's like, send out to the albatross. And the albatross will fly overhead and it can like drop like bombs or something.
Maybe all the little beetle ones like come off of it like bird fleas. You know? They like live on its back or something. The albatross goes in like long distance, and then the little beetle drones are kind of the short range reconnaissance ones. They can sneak in somewhere undetected, but they can't fly for miles and miles on their own because they're too small.
Right.
So it's sort of this like stealth bird.
I love it. I actually think, what do you think of his ship, his flagship being named the Albatross?
I like that a lot.
And then the mechanical albatross that he sends out is also essentially his mascot.
Cool.
And it's his sort of warning that says, guess what? The albatross and Captain What's-His-Name is on its way.
This reminds me of Rita, the cybernetic goose from our Dragon Wings podcast episode. Shout out to our friends Dragon Wings.
Yo, what up, guys?
Actually, Rita, the cybernetic goose, is one of my favorite creations on this show, just because it's really hilarious to me, the idea of a cybernetic goose named Rita. I thought that was so funny and cute.
It's a good name.
The albatross. I like that a lot. So we've got the Albatross as the pirate ship. We've got the Storm's Eye as the ghost ship. And then we've got, what's the name of our druid circle ship? Just the Grove or something like that?
The Grove sounds good.
Yeah.
I like that.
And there's sort of, I like the ambiguity of that name too, that people could be talking about like, oh, the Grove, and, you know, somebody who's unfamiliar, you know, a new member on the ship would say, oh, are we like landing in a grove to collect fruits? Like, is the Grove a place? No, the Grove is a ship, you idiot. What are you talking about? Get your sea legs right, man. Come on. You don't know what's going on.
I have an idea for a potential name for our pirate captain.
What is it?
Well, so he could be named Captain Scarborough.
Ooh, okay.
But he emphasizes the scar every time he like says his name.
Of course he does.
Yeah.
he's extra like
He's
that.
Like, I'm Captain Scarborough. And they're like, all right, guy.
And then he's obsessed with telling you the stories of all the scars. Actually, that would be kind kind of a funny thing, sort of Joker style, you know, how Heath Ledger Joker's always like, you want to know how I got these scars? Mm-hmm. And it's a different story every time. I imagine this guy is just covered head to toe in a million scars. And people are always asking him where he got them. And he just doesn't remember because he has hundreds of scars. So every time somebody asks him, he has to just make up a story about all his different scars.
I love the idea that he would be like bragging about his scars to somebody. And at one point, a crew member walks in the background and they're like, hey, that one on his toe he got when he couldn't open a jar of pickles last week.
Yeah, exactly. He smashed the pickles on the ground and a shard of glass lodged itself in his toe.
He's like, belay that.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, no, that was the mechanical shark mutiny of 1724. All the mechanical sharks mutinied and I fought them off with my one toe. No, dude, it was the pickle jar, obviously.
It was the pickle jar last Wednesday.
We were all there.
Wednesday is pickle party night here on the Albatross.
They'd probably eat a lot of pickles, I guess.
Yeah, you probably have to pickle everything.
Yeah, because, I mean, pickles are the...
It's how you keep it out at sea.
Yeah. Well, it's like a non-magical food that you can preserve for a long amount of time. You know, the druids can just grow stuff right away. But if you want something to last forever on a ship that doesn't have magic, it either has to be alcoholic or pickled, basically. Yeah. Or both. Hey.
Boy, these dwarves, they are high on alcohol and pickle juice, let me tell you.
I like it a lot.
They probably all have very smelly breath.
That's maybe what they would call the crew is the pickle party.
Pickle party! That's what they call themselves. Yeah. And he's always like, no, you have to sound scary.
Yeah, you're not nearly intimidating enough as the pickle party. I wonder if other crews would kind of poke fun at them, right? Captain Scarborough, he's terrifying, but that goofy ass crew of you know, pickles or whatever it is that he's got, what are they up to? Why are we scared of them? That's a hilarious juxtaposition that probably gives Captain Scarborough no end of annoyance, because he's trying to, of course, create this grand epic story and people keep telling jokes about his crew.
I'm again now picturing more Labyrinth stuff, because it's very much how Jareth is this very powerful, charismatic, frightening guy.
Yeah.
And yet he's surrounded by all these little goblins who are always like, you know, doing little dances and like just like poking things
and
chasing chickens.
They're throwing their heads around. And
he's like, wow, I'm trying to be scary, guys. And over here, you're just having this cute little party.
I kind of love it. I mean, I love David Bowie a lot, so yeah. I'm maybe a little bit biased, but I can't imagine a more, like, a better casting or just a cooler realization of the goblin. Like, to me, I love that he's this, like, big, sexy guy with a huge exaggerated bulge, and he's always, like, playing with balls, like, sexually, like, lasciviously.
Seducing 16-year-old girls.
Yeah, and then he's just surrounded by a bunch of Muppets. It's so funny to me. I love it. I just think that's beautiful.
I remember seeing a headline not long ago of somebody, they were like, hey, it's been confirmed they're going to make Labyrinth 2. And yeah. I was like, well, you better not try and include Jareth the Goblin King.
No.
Because no one could play him other than David Bowie. And we will revolt if you try.
Rest in peace, my man. That's so sad.
Rest in pepperonis.
Yeah. There are certain, not to get on a tangent here, but it's like, it's in the same way that you can't replace Robin Williams in something. How could you possibly think that replacing Robin Williams as the genie was ever going to work, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Will Smith is not a bad choice to try and do that, right?
Yeah. If they had let him do his own thing and not just try to do an impression.
Yeah. It's rough, man.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Do we want to do one more prompt and create one more thing for this world?
Let's do one more prompt, create one more thing. Let's maybe find a way to tie all of these things together. What happens when the perfect storm strikes and they all end up in the same place? You know, who wins out? What is there bargaining? Is there an escape? Is there a fight? What kind of goes on here?
Cool.
So what's our next prompt, Piper?
Our next prompt is Frighten.
Frighten. Ooh, okay.
So my mind keeps going back to the wonderful world of the first few Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
Yeah.
And I love that there are so many magical places that these people encounter. And they all have their legends and their rumors. I'm sort of thinking of kind of like a siren song sort of a situation.
Okay.
That might, or sort of maybe even like a Bermuda Triangle thing, that maybe they all get drawn to this one place.
Maybe, yeah. So maybe this is like a new challenger approaches, basically. This army of sirens sees all of this going on around them. Maybe they have a little area that's kind of theirs. That is the Bermuda Triangle.
Well, you know what it should be?
What?
It should be that Poseidon or some other ocean god says, I am sick of these motherfucking snakes on my motherfucking ocean, like causing all of these problems and chasing each other and putting mechanical sharks in my seas. I'm going to send you all to this battleground and you're going to fight this out. Or so help me.
I like that a lot. I also, so listeners, obviously you didn't see this, but the face that you made, you, when you first started saying motherfucking snakes in my motherfucking ocean, you kind of quieted down a little bit and like looked around like you were swearing in front of your mom or something. it was funny.
I was trying to think, I'm like, am I going to try and do the TV like bleeped version? These Monday, Friday snakes.
Monday to Friday snakes. It's monkey fighting snakes on this Monday to Friday plane.
But I was like, no, I'm going all in, but kind of not.
Oh man. Snakes on a plane is really good. Yeah, I like the idea of bringing in a god of the sea, whether it is a Poseidon or, you know, or what have you. Someone who's just tired of all of these
monkey
mortals. Yeah, these monkey fighting mortals on his Monday to Friday ocean. Just causing problems, like stirring things up. He's like, everything was fine. The whales were doing good. They were trying to find their home or whatever. You guys are coming and just causing trouble. And I don't like any of it. I'm not here for it. And so maybe he creates this giant storm that it's too great of a storm for the druids to weather. They're lured in because they think, okay, we pushed our ship out of the doldrums towards this big storm. We've never seen a storm like this before, but we need storms. That's how we grow our sails. So mm-hmm. they kind of go in with this false sense of security, right? The captain, Captain Scarborough, he sort of says, the greatest storm I've ever seen. This is my destiny. This is where I will find them. This is where my story will reach its peak, right? So he's like, hell yeah, man. Yeah. We're sailing straight to the center of the storm.
Exactly.
And then the eye of the storm, maybe they're just always at the eye of a storm. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just in there. He builds it around this ship. And so Poseidon's goal is to just take everything down and wipe the slate clean, basically. Mm-hmm. And I do like the siren idea. Maybe there is a siren that was a daughter of Poseidon or something like that, that doesn't get on with him well. Maybe she, you know, she wants to aerial style, like meet all the mortals, and she sings a song to try luring them out of the storm or something like that.
Well, you know what? I was actually thinking something along those lines earlier when we were describing Scarborough's ship. I feel like I was definitely picturing sort of a Ariel who would see this mechanical ship and these mechanical sharks, and she would be like, wow, what is this thing?
Yeah.
She'd go and swim up to it. So
I've seen, you know, grove-like ships before, but I've never seen mechanical sharks with guns that come out of their mouths, piloted by strange little dwarves in diving helmets.
Yeah, so I was kind of picturing a mermaid approaching Scarborough's vessel.
Cool.
But... So would it be a interesting turn of chance that she actually befriends the bad guy and is like, I'll help you out? Does
I
it
do
know
like
that he's
that.
Bad?
Yeah, well, because, you know, maybe she doesn't get to see a lot of, again, like kind of Little Mermaid style, she doesn't get to see a lot of land dwellers. So she is a little bit naive, and she's maybe taken in by, you know, the shady Scarborough. Mm-hmm. And he says, yeah, of course. I appreciate you helping us. We're just a humble bunch of pickled pirates here. And, we just want to try and get through the storm. And he tricks her into giving up secret information that allows him to get the better of everybody else. You know, she knows that her father will never, allow a hurricane of this size to touch land because he doesn't want to upset the land gods or something. So mm-hmm. if they stay close to the shore of this nearby island or something, they'll be able to avoid the worst of the storm, but they can still say they were in it and they bested the storm.
Yeah.
That might be kind of a cool angle.
I like that a lot. The way I see this kind of playing out narratively is that our druids, they would go into the storm and they would survive by their abilities and their faith and their strength, and that their skills as seamen would make them get through the storm somehow.
Yeah.
But it almost destroys them. And when they emerge from the cloud bank and they're exhausted and they're wiped out, they're like, oh my God, we barely survived that, but we did it. And at least we don't have to worry about our enemies anymore.
Yeah.
And then suddenly here comes Scarborough's ship and they're like, how did you do it? And he's like, I've got mermaid friends, bitch.
Totally. I think that's cool. They're all sort of like picking up the pieces at the end. And he's just like, I'm at full capacity right here.
Right?
Like, nothing wrong here.
He's like, I hope your living sharks are ready for my metal sharks.
Yeah, totally. Totally. It's right after the battle is over. They actually have to start the battle, you know? I wonder if there's a way that this all kind of climaxes with everyone turning on Poseidon and having like a great battle with this god or something, because they realize he's just going to keep sending storms at us and he's going to sink us all. Like, you know, kind of like how in the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, they're like the, you know, the,
They have to trap Calypso.
Yeah, exactly. They have to trap Calypso because it's whatever. We don't have to talk about those movies anymore. We've talked about those movies a lot.
I would love to keep talking about them. Davy Jones gets his heart broken because she doesn't show up when he dedicates 10 years of service and she's not there for his one day of romantic lovemaking. And so he's like, you know what, guys? I'm going to tell you how to trap her in a human form and then the seas will be yours. You can tame the seas and do whatever you want.
Exactly. Retaking the seas from a god, whether it's out of spite or whether it's out of, you know, self-preservation or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think that's a very interesting climax to this. And, you know, maybe the way they would do it is the druids would say, look, you want to tell the greatest story of all time? You took down a god. You reclaimed the sea for humanity or for dwarf kind or whatever. That's way more impressive than just finding a simple ship. Mm-hmm. We'll help you do this. We'll help you fight him because we know more about, you know, the gods. We're in tuned with the magical world. If you let us use your faster ship to track down the ghost ship and let us cleanse it. Like, that kind of solves everybody's problems, I think. And that would be – that's what I think the druids, if they are trying to just sort of seek this balance, that's a thing that makes sense they would kind of pitch to him. But whether or not Scarborough would go for it
– Well, I was actually going to ask you, do you think these druids who love balance, would they see that as the right thing to do, to take down the god of the sea? I mean, isn't it his place, and wouldn't you see him as a balance keeper? Or maybe he's corrupted. Maybe he's a corrupt god.
Yeah. I mean, he, you know, he attacked them too. So they do have to be able to keep up. You know, they live on the sea. If the god of the sea is attacking them, something is wrong. Whether it's that he's corrupt or whether it's that, you know, he just is a mean guy and sometimes you got to put him in his place. I think there are a lot of ways that would make sense. Maybe that's something that would be more interesting just to leave for our viewers to decide. You know,
Definitely.
What would be the turn that our druids would have that would say we're okay with attacking this god of the sea that has helped sort of sustain us for all this time? That seems really neat. And I like sort of leaving this journey in the hands of both crews together, you know, that instead of them continuing to be rivals, they sail off into the sunset together to solve this, you know, this bigger problem.
Yeah.
That's kind of neat.
No, I think this is a really cool kind of launch point.
Scarborough the Redeemer, they would call him. That's what they would maybe be like saying, here's all the titles and tales they would tell of you. You'd be a hero now. You saved this ship. You didn't steal it for yourself. People fear you already, but now they'll love and respect you too. You can have it all.
Yeah. I think he would be like, yeah. But that thing about me killing a god, though.
Yeah, I also like that one.
Yeah. Who needs a freaking ghost ship and I'm a god slayer?
For sure. Yeah. I think that's really great. Do you have any final thoughts about this, or are we cool with where we're leaving this off?
I think I'm cool with where we are at.
Awesome.
These are some good ideas.
All right.
And thank you, Holy Cannoli, for letting us play around with this world.
Yeah, we love getting to, you know, use listener recommended prompts and getting to, you know, get our hands dirty, play around in your sandbox a little bit. We would love to hear if you end up using any of this or if you have any other ideas that you think of because of this. Please send them our way. You know where to find us. To all of our other listeners, if you had fun with any of this, we are, of course, also happy to hear your feedback on any of these stories. I'm sure, you know, that would be a really fun thing for us to, you know, revisit. If we like the directions you guys are pushing this story, maybe we come back and take a look at this again. We can always keep building on this because I think this is a great foundation for a really interesting story.
Absolutely.
Quick rec room here. I just want to say, go look up any of the stories about any of the children of the gods in Greek mythology. It's always interesting. You know, you look up a Perseus or you look up a Heracles or something like that, they get into some shit. And it's always exciting. And I think there's a lot of stuff that you could very easily take from any of those stories and use in your D&D games, especially if you're playing an already sort of Greek-inspired sort of world like that. Like we've kind of been doing in our recent game, we've had Medusas and we've had sort of Greek pillars and healers and things like that.
Definitely.
I think that's really, really fun.
I would say go watch the first, second, and third parts of the Caribbean movie.
Yes, of course.
And also watch Labyrinth.
Yeah, certainly. Those are all the recommendations, I think, then that we have this week. Again, like we said, kind of a quicker episode here. If you enjoyed, please consider reaching out to us, leaving us your feedback. Piper, where can our listeners go to do that if they wish to do so?
Yeah, well, if you want to find us on Twitter, we are at WorldForgePod at Twitter. And if you want to send us an email, you can do so at WorldForgePod@gmail.com. Yeah. And if you want to make our days and put smiles on our faces, you can leave us a review at either Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you listen to your stuff. We're on most of those things.
That would just be wonderful. It is the best way to support our show by far. It really does a lot to help just get our show out there. It helps it show up in people's recommendations. The algorithm really likes it, and we really like it. So, yeah, please consider doing that. And if you have any other ideas for topics for the show, we love to hear those as well. If you have a world that you're developing that you need a little bit of help with, send it our way, and we'll see if it's something we can do an episode out of. We've done this a couple times now, and we plan to continue doing it because eventually we're going to run out of our own ideas otherwise as well.
Let us play in your sandbox.
Yes, please, please. So with that, I think we will leave you all this week. Thank you so much for bearing with us with this slightly short and slightly delayed episode. But, you know, it just gets crazy out there sometimes. So we are going to be back again next week with another really, really fun topic. And we appreciate and love you all. Goodbye.
Bye now.